What is the significance of the number three? Why does it show up so much, both in physics and spirituality? In this episode, we explore the power of three, its meaning and importance in making us who and what we are. Nikola Tesla once claimed, "If you only knew the magnificence of the three, six, and nine, then you would have the keys to the universe." Each of these numbers, 3, 6, and 9, are perfectly divisible by 3. Tesla truly believed in the power of 3, as evidenced by his life. For example, he was known to repeat everything in sets of 3, and he would only stay in hotel rooms with a number divisible by 3. Was Tesla just being superstitious or OCD, or could he have been purposefully tuning himself in to the power of 3 for good reason? The number three is considered very sacred by spiritual traditions throughout the world. Whether it is seen as the Holy Trinity, or the Supernal Triad, or the archetypes of father, mother, child, or the sacred geometry of the triangle, the importance of three is universal. Not only is it spiritually significant, the power of three appears in science again and again. It relates to some of the most important unanswered questions in modern physics, such as why do we live in three dimensions of space? And why are there particles of matter grouped into three generations in the Standard Model? Let's explore these a bit more closely. There's an interesting phenomenon that occurs with particles of matter. Each particle seems to come in three versions or generations of itself. Each version has the same charge, the same interactions with the strong, weak, and electromagnetic forces. The only difference that distinguishes them is their mass. For example, the other versions of the electron are the muon and the tau particles. Likewise, there are three types of corresponding neutrinos. Altogether, these form what are called the six leptons. Then there are also six quarks that are grouped into three generations, with the quarks that are called up, charm, and top being one set, and then the other three quarks called down, strange, and bottom comprising the other set. Altogether, these six quarks and six leptons are called the 12 fermions that make up ordinary matter. Again, the only real difference in the three generations of particles in a particular set is the mass, which is determined by its interactions with the Higgs field. But that mass difference can be quite large from one generation to the next. And the larger the mass, the more energy it takes to generate and sustain that particle. Thus, the less stable it is. In our universe today, we primarily find the lowest mass generation of particles. The heavier particles are only created in high energy collisions, like those found in particle accelerators or due to cosmic rays, or perhaps during the time of the Big Bang, but these heavier particles very quickly decay into their lighter generations. For example, the heavier quarks generated in particle colliders will decay into the up and down quarks. Now, why is all this important? Well, in physics today, they call this process of particle decay a flavor change or transmutation. When we hear the word transmutation or even change, we should think of alchemy. Alchemy is a natural process that all things undergo in order to transform and transmute from an unstable state to a more stable or incorruptible state. Here, we are seeing alchemy at work in the subatomic quantum realm. We might reflect upon where we are out of balance or unstable in our lives. And what can we do to alchemically transmute those areas and bring greater balance? With that also comes the question, what do we need to let decay or die in our lives or in our thoughts in order to allow the alchemy to progress? If we look at our society today, there are many things out of balance. Those things are created by humans who are out of balance. As humans, we are all connected. We all share a collective mind. So those imbalances that we see in society are also in each of us. And the only thing we can really change is ourselves. When we see the world as our mirror and we take ownership of what it is reflecting to us, that is when we can start making new choices and taking new actions to transform and transmute from the inner to the outer to bring balance and stability. Now, how do we know if we are progressing in the alchemical process? This is one of the beautiful things about alchemy. It gives us a clear roadmap to the stages of progression. To begin with, alchemy talks about three phases. This power of three shows up a lot in alchemy. And these three phases are called by the Latin terms nigredo, albedo, and rubedo, which refer to colors, namely the black phase, the white phase, and the red phase. In the black phase of nigredo, it relates to a time when we experience maybe a dark night of the soul, or alternatively, a time of needing to root out impurities and imbalances. Then the white phase of albedo is a time of purification and raising vibration to connect to spirit, and then bringing that higher energy back to be embodied in the physical. And then finally, the red phase of rubedo is when we crystallize or solidify into a more complete, integrated, and balanced form. Just like a heavy quark or lepton decays from an unstable state to an intermediate state and then to a final stable state, we too are meant to transform and transmute from nigredo to albedo to rubedo. And this is a cyclic process, meaning we don't just do it once, but many times, in different aspects of our lives, until we eventually become more whole, awakened, empowered, and fully realized humans. There is a science to the alchemical process, and there is also an art. The art is in how we, as active participants, learn to harness, express, and work with the laws of nature in order to accelerate the transformational cycles. Examples of these laws of nature that we can harness are the seven hermetic principles. One of those principles that really applies to the power of three is the principle of rhythm. What is the principle of rhythm? Well, it says everything flows in and out. Everything has its tides. All things rise and fall. The pendulum swing manifests itself in everything. The measure of the swing to the right is the same as the measure of the swing to the left. Rhythm compensates. In other words, things are constantly oscillating between two poles, and somewhere in the middle is the balance point. This principle of rhythm shows up in everything from the macrocosm to the microcosm and in all realms, whether they be of mind, matter, or energy. Now, in quantum physics, one way we see this principle of rhythm show up is in the behavior of neutrinos. As we saw before, there are three types or generations of neutrinos. But unlike the other particles of the Standard Model, neutrinos are very light in mass, at least 500,000 times lighter than an electron. And they only interact very weakly with other particles. Plus, the mass differences between each type of neutrino are also very tiny. If they had no mass at all, then all these types of neutrinos would be physically identical. And since their masses are so small, they don't decay like heavier particles. However, that little bit of mass difference allows neutrinos to transform in another way. They go through what are called neutrino oscillations. And what does that mean? Well, it means that any single neutrino is a quantum superposition of all three types. As it travels through space-time, it oscillates from one type to another. Rather than a single pendulum swinging, we can imagine a neutrino as three pendulums coupled together, each with slightly different mass. Because of their mass difference, each pendulum swings at slightly different rates. This results in a periodic transformation process where a neutrino might start out as an electron neutrino. Then, as it travels, it will become a mixture of all three types. And at some distant point, if an observer were to measure which type of neutrino it is, they might get an electron type, a muon type, or a tau type of neutrino. As a personal aside, this is one of the research projects I worked on for several years during my PhD studies in physics. At the time, astrophysicists were trying to understand the sun and the particles it generated. Some of the particles predicted by the solar model were electron-type neutrinos, but up to that point, all neutrino detectors were only observing one-third to half as many electron neutrinos as predicted by the solar model. Now, the Sudbury Neutrino Observatory was a collaboration of over 100 physicists from different universities geared towards solving this solar neutrino problem. It was designed using 1,000 tons of heavy deuterium water submerged inside a larger vessel of regular water, all surrounded by 10,000 photomultiplier tubes to detect the signals. And this was then located a mile underground in a mine in Sudbury, Canada. To say the least, it was quite a process getting to the actual on-site laboratory. We had to gear up in miner's gear, take a rickety elevator down with the miners, going 1 mile deep into the earth, then walk over a mile through dusty tunnels called the Drift. Then, once we arrived at the site, we had to clean up, change into clean room gear for our day of work, and every now and then hearing popping sounds of the earth shifting around us, wondering in the backs of our minds if there might be a collapse in the tunnels or anything like that, but fortunately they never did. And while I worked on the project for 4 years, I was happy to only have to spend one summer on site. Anyhow, the Sudbury Neutrino Observatory group was able to verify that the solar model was correct, that neutrinos do oscillate, and they were also able to identify a more accurate range of masses for the neutrinos. What can we learn from these neutrino oscillations? How does this apply to us? Well, for one thing, we must realize that we each have our own rhythm. But when we are coupled with other people, such as in an intimate relationship or when working on projects with colleagues, we also need to be aware that each person has their own unique rhythm. Not everyone is going to be able to dance to our rhythm all the time, even if we are the boss or the alpha. So we need to be flexible and mix it up. Allow our partners to lead when their rhythm is strong, giving us a chance to rest a bit. And then soon enough, our turn to lead will come again in the proper flow and timing. In addition to this, we are complex people. So how many rhythms do we have happening simultaneously within our lives? We have many rhythms. We have a biorhythm that is tied to our day-night cycles, as well as lunar and solar cycles. We also have emotional rhythm, which for women tends to be tied to the moon phases, and for men is tied to the sun phases. Then we have mental rhythms. There are times when we are in high creativity phases and other times of low mental energy. There's also the rhythm of our spirit. This one tends to flow on an accelerating and expanding scale, like a Fibonacci spiral, rather than a linear or circular progression. Many of our cultural rhythms are based on linear or circular flows, but the rhythm and progression of life is meant to be ever expanding and accelerating, like the golden spiral and Fibonacci sequence. When we are living in sync with this rhythm, that is when we will feel fully alive and progressing towards our full potential. Many of us feel the pressure of an accelerated rhythm in our world today. Things are happening so fast. When we feel challenged to keep up with today's rhythm, it's partly because we are clinging to old programming and ways of operating that are linear or circular. And the other reason is because we just aren't aware of our spirit's rhythm. The shift in our collective consciousness is being driven by the evolutionary leap our spirit is striving towards. And this is the rhythm we need to attune our body, mind, and soul to. How do we shift our rhythm to harness this principle? First, we have to be aware of our cycles and rhythms. Know when we are in a flow versus when we are in an ebb. Second, rather than fighting it, learn to use it. This only happens, though, when we are prepared for the pendulum to swing. For example, many people these days want to be in the flow all the time. That is not sustainable, and it leads to burnout. The principle of rhythm says all things rise and fall. After the flow will come the ebb. It is inevitable. But by being prepared for the ebb, we can use it to rest, recover, and take care of ourselves. As we do, we will then be ready to maximize upon the next flow time. And by resting during the ebb rather than fighting it, we will help support our rhythm to shift back into the flow faster. Even better, though, is to create our own rhythm that accounts for both ebb and flow, meaning that we can purposefully incorporate downtime into our weekly schedule to maintain balance. This involves knowing our rhythm and how much recovery time we need to bounce back. Is there anything more we can do to master the effects of rhythm in our lives? Yes, there is. Hermetic initiates have methods of bringing themselves to a balance point at will. They have learned how to use this principle of rhythm rather than be used by it. Typically, as this principle says, the degree to which we swing one way will be followed by an equal degree of swing the opposite way. For example, if someone swings into high or elated states, such as being happy about some event, that state is often conditional and transient based on outer circumstances. We can expect that soon enough, that same person will be swinging to the low or depressed state. The degree of swing low will match the degree of swing high. This can make for an emotional roller coaster. Rather than seeking the high, we should be seeking the balance point and to minimize the degree of swing to one side or the other. Hermeticists, Kabbalists, and mystics all have methods of establishing and reinforcing balance on a daily basis. The Kabbalists call this living in the middle pillar. Such a life is one that is full of joy, passion, purpose, and constantly raising our balance point to higher levels of vibration. Rather than seeking feelings of happiness, which are fleeting and based on outer circumstances or conditions, we seek joy, which is an inner state of being that is our natural state when we live in the middle pillar. The swings of the pendulum are what pull us out of that calm, peaceful, joyful center. Thus, to master our rhythm, we create a lifestyle of balance and joy. True balance is a very dynamic state of being. It is not static. There is always movement in some area of our life. And we seek that movement, or another way of saying it is we seek progression. Instead of getting stuck in a comfort zone, we realize that magic, miracles, and alchemy happen outside the comfort zone. Outside the comfort zone is where the juice of life is. Here, the rhythm is exciting and vibrant, whereas inside the comfort zone, the rhythm of life becomes like a dull, constant march that hypnotizes us into becoming like sleepwalkers in life. Through personal and spiritual alchemy, we can learn to shift our balance point to higher vibrations and levels of attainment. Living the middle pillar involves bringing the polar aspects of ourselves into equilibrium. First, we bring in equal amounts of discipline and structure on the one hand, balanced with creativity and intuition on the other. Next is to bring into balance the power of the warrior with the love and mercy of the healer. And finally, the most important balance is that of masculine and feminine energies or aspects of creation. These correlate with the three horizontal bars on the Kabbalistic tree of life. Here again, we see the power of three. Now, to scientists, this reoccurring pattern of three is puzzling. They don't know how to make sense of it, but they admit it must be a clue to something deeper, something that lies beyond ordinary physics. Alchemists and Kabbalists, on the other hand, offer great insights about why three. Interestingly, all the particles from the Standard Model of Physics could be neatly arranged on the three-dimensional tree of life. To perhaps provide new insights for scientists, in this arrangement, the 12 particles of matter are assigned to the four outer pillars, each pillar representing one set of the three generations. While the five particles of force that mediate interactions of matter are assigned to the middle pillar. Then through all of the tree flows the light of spirit from source. What do the alchemists have to say? Well, according to the ancient wisdom, if we are to generate anything new, there must be both masculine and feminine principles working together. Western alchemists call these principles soul and luna, or sometimes also sulfur and salt. And just like it takes both a male seed and a female egg to conceive a child, the creative potentials of either masculine or feminine alone cannot accomplish anything on their own. They must be united together. Their union creates an animated seed that combines both aspects of masculine and feminine into a third thing. The alchemists call this third essential mercury. Only with all three essentials do we have life. It takes the union of the two through a third to generate anything new or to allow for transformation and transmutation to take place. One of the great alchemy initiates of the West, Paracelsus, said 500 years ago, "All things created by nature consist of three primary elements, namely natural mercury, sulfur, and salt in combination. Wherever corporal salt is mixed with spiritual mercury and animated sulfur into one body, then nature begins to work by means of a separating fire. These three essentials of salt, sulfur, and mercury are also found in the alchemical traditions of the East under different names. In Ayurvedic alchemy, they are called Kapha, Pitta, and Vata. In yogic alchemy, they are the Ida, Pingala, and Sushumna. In Taoist alchemy, they are the Jing, Qi, and Shen. Now, Paracelsus also coined the term spagyrics, which means to draw out the essence through a process of separating and reassembling. Through this process, the essentials are purified, uplifted, and restored to their original eternal purity. At first, these three essentials are bound up together within any materia, but that materia is polluted or corrupted in some way. To perform the alchemy, they must first be extracted or drawn out. From this, they are carefully separated and then purified. This raises the vibration, lifting the body up to spirit, and also drawing down the spirit to become more embodied. In this heightened and enlivened state, the three purified essentials are then recombined and brought to a stabilized and perfected form. But what are these three essentials within us? Hermes Trismegistus says that they are body, soul, and spirit. Paracelsus clarifies that mercury is the spirit, sulfur is the soul, and salt is the body. Now, in today's scientific terminology, we could see them as mass for the body, energy for the soul, and light for the spirit, such as we see maybe in the three terms of Einstein's famous equation, E equals mc squared. Or there's also Newton's second law of motion, F equals ma, where the three become mass, force, and acceleration. When we look at these two equations, we see that they both relate to mass. And recall from earlier how quarks and leptons and neutrinos can only transform between generations because they have mass. If the mass is zero, then there is no intrinsic energy to physically transform with. What does this tell us? Well, one way we could interpret this is that bringing energy, light or spirit, down into material density is necessary for the transformational process. This would agree with the lines in the Emerald Tablets of Hermes where it says, "The power of it is integral if it is churned into earth." From a quantum physics perspective, we could also associate these three essentials with matter, as in fermions, force, as in bosons, and consciousness, or will, which the alchemists also call the secret fire residing at the center core of every atom. These relate to the three pillars of the Kabbalistic tree of life. The pillar on the left is often called the pillar of form and is seen as feminine. The pillar on the right is often called the pillar of force and is seen as masculine. While the middle pillar is called the pillar of equilibrium, where the two side pillars of masculine and feminine unite. The various levels of the middle pillar often correlate with the will. At the top is divine will. In the center is the will of the universe. The second from the bottom is our human collective will. And the very bottom is our body's will. Not only are there three pillars on the tree of life, each of those has three spheres on it above the physical. A study of the tree's structure reveals that there are also three main triads and three horizontal crossbars. And the Kabbalistic book, the Sefer Yetzirah, also talks about there being three mother letters, Aleph, Mem, and Shin. Clearly, the power of three is well recognized by the Kabbalists. Kabbalah teaches us that only when the third aspect came in could the universe be created. There must be a source of all light, which was represented by the apex of the tree called the crown. Then that light must be expanded out. This outward-reaching force is the masculine aspect of creation. It is the emanation from the source called wisdom. But if that power is to be harnessed in order to bring anything into formation, there must be a third aspect that draws the light inward to be embodied in form. This inward movement towards form is the feminine aspect of creation called understanding. It completes the upper triad, or the first sacred geometry of the triangle. From these, the three pillars are also established, as the rest of the tree is formed according to this original pattern. But only when we have three aspects can form be generated. So the power of three is necessary for light or spirit to come into the physical where it can transform and evolve. What is spirit or light trying to transform into? Alchemists, of course, talk about the philosopher's stone, and there are many interpretations of what that is because alchemy can be applied in many ways. The Kabbalists have a vision of becoming the Adam Kadmon, which translates as the godlike or perfected human. Adam Kadmon is said to be a perfectly unified light body where the three aspects of body, soul, and spirit have all been transformed, transmuted, and unified into one immortal being of light. Tibetan Buddhism has a similar level of realization. They call the rainbow body, or Dzogchen, the great perfection. How is such a state of perfection accomplished? It is something that happens only in the physical. It can be attained from devoting oneself to the spiritual and internal alchemy process. Our bodies literally are alchemical vessels that produce all manner of transformations. Our mind and soul must also go through the alchemical process, as these are the mediator between spirit and body. Paracelsus says the soul unites the two contraries, the body and the spirit, and changes them into one essence. What does this tell us? Well, alchemy works through the interplay of these three essentials uniting to become one essence. It also tells us that if we want to unite our body and spirit so that we can fulfill our potential and create a better life, we must do so through the soul. Why the soul? Remember, the soul is the operating system and interface that allows our eternal spirit to interact with the physical body. The soul mediates the high vibrational energies of spirit and filters it so that the body can handle and utilize the energy at this level. It also translates the signals and energy from the body back up to spirit. But our soul's operating system can become corrupted by faulty programming or unhealed traumas that lead to glitches in the system. For example, we know a lot about our bodies and what it takes to live a healthy life. But what stops us? Why don't we do what we know is needed to thrive? Well, our mental patterns, our emotional attachments, our habits, our subconscious sabotage mechanisms, our belief systems, and other ways we block ourselves. In other words, it's the programs that cause our soul not to function properly and disrupts the energy flow of our good intentions. These faulty programs and indoctrinations that corrupt our soul are things we have learned from the outer world. They are not true to our spirit. To correct this, we need to purify, debug, and upgrade the operating system of our soul if we want to make progress. Yet so many people are so focused on the outer world They think that we have to change the outer first, but the outer is a manifestation of the inner. We need to change the inner first. For example, the problems we see in the outer world, like war, poverty, inequality, and so forth, are manifestations of the issues we have inside of us. We are at odds with ourselves. We feel lack and not enough inside. We treat ourselves unfairly, often being our own worst critic, and so on. This is all because of the faulty programming and misalignment of our soul. How do we reprogram and transform our soul? Well, there are many methods and practices from Tibetan, yogic, Taoist, Kabbalistic, and other mystery school traditions that are all helpful. These practices are geared towards learning to harness this alchemy within the body, mind, and soul. For example, meditation is great because it helps us quiet the mind and find peace within. But that is just one aspect. We also need to reprogram and reorient our mental and emotional constructs. We need to truly heal and transform, reminding our soul of who we really are as a spirit of love and light. We need to rectify the faulty programs of our soul. To work on the soul is to work on the depth. If we return to the analogy of a computer operating system, and it gets infected by a virus or malware, we have three options. One, we can erase the whole system and start with a new one. Two, find an expert who knows how to fix it. Or three, learn the programming language ourselves. When it comes to the soul, option one really isn't an option. So we are left with options two and three. Also, with regards to the soul, all healing is self-healing. We can hire an expert to help us, such as a skilled healer, but ultimately, we are the ones who have to go into the depth to heal and transform ourselves. Any good healer of integrity will say that their job is to simply facilitate and guide the process to help us speed it up, but we have to be ready to receive and do the work. And when we want to get really good at self-transforming, we must work even more to attain self-mastery. This means we have to learn the programming language of the soul so that we can address any internal issues as needed. It means we dive into understanding our operating system and move beyond just working the feel-good applications. This is where people who live the tools of Kabbalah and walk a path of initiation in the mysteries really thrive. On the Kabbalistic tree of life, the top triad represents spirit, while the bottom sphere represents the body. Everything else in between is the soul. As we ascend the tree of life, we discover the intricate workings of our soul and learn how to debug and reprogram each module of our soul's operating system. Kabbalah is like an owner's manual to life and shows us how to optimize the functions of our mind and soul so that we can live our full potential. It brings us the deeper knowledge that we need to come to a greater understanding of how we transform ourselves. When we become more self-aware, we can then more easily recognize what life is trying to reflect to us. As such, ascending the tree of life becomes a very accelerated process to up-leveling how our soul is operating. It is a form of spiritual alchemy. When we realign our soul to our spirit, everything in our life flows better, and we are able to create a life we love. And for those who truly want to achieve their full potential and become a fully awakened and perfected human, there is a path that can lead us there. It is an alchemical path that takes us through all the stages from Nigredo to Albedo to Rubedo, and it continues on through however many cycles of this process as are needed to raise our vibration to that highest level, until we eventually recombine our three essentials of spirit, soul, and body into one indestructible whole, combining within us the powers of above and below, until we become the Philosopher's Stone, the Adam Kadmon, the Rainbow Body. Join me again as we explore deeper into the secret fire of alchemists and discover how we can control the atoms of our bodies. I'm Dr. Teresa Bullard. Thank you for exploring the mysteries of the universe with me in this episode of Mystery Teachings.